Awesome to welcome Georgia Southern head coach Charlie Henry to the basketball podcast. Henry enters his third season as the head men's basketball coach at Georgia Southern. The Eagles improved by 8 wins during the 2024-25 season, winning their first round game in the Sun Belt tournament as the 9 seed. The squad once again broke the team record with 313 threes and 912 attempts, and finished top five in the following statistics in program history: field goal attempts, rebounds, and held opponents to the sixth lowest 3-point percentage. During his first season at the helm, Henry guided the Eagles to an 8-10 record in the Sun Belt play and a quarterfinal appearance in the Sun Belt tournament for the third consecutive season. Before Georgia Southern, Henry spent 4 seasons at the University of Alabama and has over 10 years of coaching experience on three major levels of basketball: NBA, G League, and Division I Power 5 schools, including stops with the Chicago Bulls, Windy City Bulls, and Iowa State, among others.
Do you know which lineups and player combinations are the most productive? Hoopsalytics has the most comprehensive lineup analysis system available. Coaches can see how each group performs offensively or defensively or excels in special situations. For example, if you need to force a late game turnover, you can see which group has the best defensive turnover percentage, or see which four athletes work best with your star player. And you can do the same team-based analysis for groups of two or three players as well. Hoopsalytics brings the most powerful analytics to teams of all levels. It's easy to use and affordable. It's like AI for basketball coaches. Discover how Hoopsalytics can help you make better data-driven coaching decisions. Visit hoopsalytics.com today to learn more.
Coach Henry, welcome to the basketball podcast.
Thank you, Chris. Great to be on with you.
Great to have you here, and we connected ages ago now, and you've been a few different stops along the way. So maybe let's talk about just quickly your journey and some of the coaches that have influenced it.
Yeah, for sure. I knew I always wanted to coach. I'd say you hear some people and they talk about stumbling into coaching. That was not me. My dad was a longtime high school coach in the Detroit area. So for as long as I could remember, I was getting done with school and walk into his practices. I used to think it was so cool when I'd be in his gym and there'd be different college coaches. Obviously, they're recruiting, and I just felt that was probably the best job in the world. Knew I always wanted to do this. Played small college myself. And I got done. I had a semester of school left, had to do an internship and whatnot. I approached the head coach at Romulus High School, Nate Oates, and I told him about my situation. I said, "Hey, I really want to work in basketball. I'm bound to this area right now as I'm finishing my degree requirements, but I want to get into coaching. And you've obviously you had a great program there. I would say probably the best program in the state." So it was close to where I was from. Approached him and his assistant Josh Baker, and integrated myself in that program. And from there, I went to the University of Utah as a graduate assistant. Coach Oates had helped me connect with Coach Boylan, and he had been at Michigan State, and obviously some people there had put us in touch as well. It was awesome. I was there for a year, met my wife there. My wife was coach's nanny, so he's got that one on me. He's got that ultimate assist for me, helping, that. From there, I was with the Indiana Pacers, working in their video room for a year. I went on from Indiana to work at Iowa State for 3 seasons with Coach Hoiberg, who's a great friend, just a tremendous coach. And then I was with him for not just at Iowa State for 3 years, but 4 years in Chicago. First 2 as an assistant on the big team, and then the last 2 years as head coach of the G League team. And then after that, there's coach had gotten let go during my last season coaching the G League. We actually had a good season, made the playoffs and whatnot, but knew there's just a degree of uncertainty around the situation. So he was taking the job at Nebraska, and actually Coach Oates had got the job at Alabama. So I felt like it was probably an opportunity to jump back in college, and that's kind of where my heart led me. And I went with Coach Oates, we've been great friends for the last 15 years. Opportunity to help him build that program at Alabama. I jumped at it. It was our first time moving down south, so I think my wife was like, "What the heck's going on?" But had a great 4 years and was able to obviously move on and become the head coach here at Georgia Southern. So I tell people often, shoot, I've loved every job I've had. I've really been fortunate that way to work for great coaches with some great players, and just really just it's been awesome.
It's been awesome. It's been fun to be able to watch your journey from afar and different coaching styles. And we're not going to dive into each coach yet, but maybe just talk about how you became your authentic self with all these incredible influences in your life.
Yeah, it's amazing. You play basketball your whole life. But then you start coaching, and I've talked to former players as well on this that have played much longer than I have. But you play it growing up, and it's amazing how much you learn after you're done playing. It's, man, if I'd have known some of this as a player, I might have been a little bit better. But I wanted to really just learn and grow early in my career, and that's always just do a lot. Obviously, do the job you have, but then I also wanted opportunities to do extra and learn more and all that. So I feel like that kind of thirst to get better, work at my craft, I felt like that's always stuck with me, and I always wanted to be prepared. I always wanted to be competent, know what I was talking about, be detailed. That's, again, to me, my voices, you obviously take from each coach you work with, but for me, yeah, I'd say I always want to just be prepared, competent, and obviously just sincere with the guys I'm coaching.
Some statistical success at Georgia Southern, and we'll start with one of them, which, knowing your background and knowing who you've coached with, is not a surprise, and that's 3-point attempts and 3-point makes, and increasing that number for your team and for your program. Maybe a little bit talk about that process, the tactical approach, philosophical approach of shooting more threes, and then having success from that.
Yeah, for sure. Again, going back to Iowa State with Fred, we're really early, I would say, in college basketball, at least as far as shot spectrum and really going all in on that. I remember there was article going into one of our NCAA tournaments where if you hate long twos, Iowa State's your team. Again, it's really just educating guys, and we're in the process of that right now. Obviously, we got a lot of new guys, just the nature of college basketball. And again, majority of those guys, they're used to shooting off the dribble pull-up twos that are contested by their primary defender. And what it really is just an education process of educating on them on what the most efficient shots in basketball. Obviously, you want to get to the free throw line unless you're playing undisciplined defense. Like, they're probably not fouling those shots very much. So you want to get to free throw line. You want to create at the rims. And then after that, the next, and we know, again, good defenses, they're not just going to foul you all game. They're not just going to let you shoot layups, even though that's what you want to get. The next most efficient shot is, for us, catch and shoot threes. It's a process educating the guys. I'd say we introduce it once we have a little bit of numbers. I was even before I was going on the road this past week, and I was like, let me see our numbers through 2 weeks because we're taking too many tough twos. I was like, let me see what we're shooting in all of our areas, and let's start that process of showing them just points per shot, like why we really try to limit those, you know what I'm saying? And especially against our defense, because that's not, again, you can see it against a deep drop. It's wide open, coach. It's wide open, but it's not the way we play defense. Hopefully, against our defense, we're getting and tagging the paint and obviously turning it into efficient plays.
Talk to us then about that other side, because defensively you've held opponents to the low 3-point percentage, and that's also a team historical kind of success. So what does that process for you look like in terms of practice and then executing that?
Yeah, I always go back and forth, like, how much defense are you going to do in the summer? How much is going to be geared towards just player development and kind of instituting your style of play? Again, first week, we did quite a bit of defense just to give them a foundation. And then obviously, once some of the restrictions loosen up, we'll spend more time on it. But we can get defensively, man, we can really kind of get bogged down in the minutia of it. And obviously, in the summertime, I want to get up and down. I want to play. I want to get better. Defensively, for me, it's always been, what can our fives do? Obviously, we're primarily man-to-man defensive team, with maybe just one change of pace defense that we work on throughout the year. But for me, what our fives can have the ability to do well obviously impacts our decisions about what type of defense we're going to build. If you look at us in our 4 years at Alabama, where obviously Coach Oates kind of let me handle the defense, we had two elite defenses, but we did it very different ways. We impacted the ball in year two, and we're really good. And then by year four, we were playing a deep drop because we felt like Charles was really good in that and could protect the rim. So to me, it's like, what can our fives do? I've at Georgia Southern, we don't necessarily have the 7-foot rim protecting big, and especially goes with how I want to play offensively, because I want our fives to be able to help us offensively, be a trigger in our offense. So a lot of times that lends itself to playing smaller, quicker, more athletic big. So for us, it's more, we're trying to win the line of scrimmage, obviously stop the ball, impact the ball. Usually it lends itself to switching at some point where you're not committing two on the ball all the time. At some point, you probably got to switch and kind of limit the opportunities where you're putting two on the ball. But I've found if you can do two things well, I haven't really been a part of a team that could do all three, but I've, again, we were like at Alabama in your forward drop team, Noah Clowney, when he would play, that he'd start at the four, and then when he would play the five, we could switch one through five. So by the end of the year, man, if you can do two things really well, I think you're probably on your way to being a really good defense. I haven't had success doing all three, but it's something I struggle with because I think all the practice time in college, and I'm like, why can't we? But then I remember when you get new guys, all the things you got to teach them. Hey, sometimes the continuity. If you had guys from multiple years like the NBA does, you probably could get into some of those things. But for us, it's really what's our base defense? Shape it around our five skill set, their strengths. And then everyone's going to probably need a change of pace deal at some point. So if we can cultivate that, we'll probably be on our way to being a pretty good defense.
Absolutely. And talking about shaping it around your five a little bit, a big part of your philosophy as well is playing to your player's strengths defensively and not just offensively. And we tend to think about it just offensively. So talk to us a little bit more about that playing to your player's strengths defensively.
Yeah, I would say, honestly, I would say that's probably from, working with Fred and Nate, who are both two great offensive coaches. When they're thinking lineups, obviously, they're thinking both ends, but they're probably going to lean more towards offense. They're not going to put five guys as far as lineups go that don't have a chance to have success on offense. I think when you're assistant for guys like that, that are just like really good offensive coaches, and defensively, you're trying to figure out, okay, we know he wants to play certain lineups, so how can we get stops? I think, you basically have to adapt to that. It's what you're going to do with the four. Again, that you might have a four that's not necessarily a switch guy. Can we cultivate a plan for him to have success and keep him on a matchup? I think things like that come up. Off ball rules. Again, if you're not going to switch pick and roll, you're probably not doing a ton of switching off ball. And then I think getting liberal with matchups too. You might have, again, they play certain teams and maybe there's a lower usage guy. So it's looking at all those things and again trying to give, which is what it's all about is coaching. It's just trying to give your guys a chance to be successful and give your team a chance to have success. Feel like being free to try different things is something that I've always enjoyed and prided myself on not being married to any one thing.
Talk to us about more. Does that come back to a little bit your background with your dad and being around coaching for such a long time that you're not necessarily being bound to one past experience or one past way of playing?
To me, it's as a coach, you learn so much from the coaches you go against. Obviously, you learn from the coaches you work with, but how about the coaches you prepare against? And then the simplest, and I know you've talked about it on different podcasts, but the simplest thing is when something happens to you that you don't like, maybe that's something we need to look at doing. Our second year in Chicago, we were the eighth seed in the playoffs, and we went to Boston and we won our first two games. So we were coming back home up 2-0. And then, that game three, Brad Stevens, and we didn't have Rajon. So obviously that was a big factor as well. But game three, I thought he really swung game three in the third quarter. They played zone in the third quarter and were able to hide IT. Isaiah Thomas, we were really hunting him offensively. And the zone kind of gave us just enough off balance. And obviously they stepped up and made some shots as well. But again, there's little things like that. When I was in the G League, Kobe Carl would zone our ATOs all the time. We play on They were out west, so we only played them once a year, but he'd zone our ATOs and it really bothered me. And you have stuff like that, and you're like, why don't I do that? You know what I mean? If I don't like that being done to me, why don't we, make that a part of us? And obviously you can do anything you want. You can't do everything, can't be good at everything, but it's really learning from just as much the coaches you work with. It's learning from other coaches you compete against as well.
So you referenced change of pace defense. So I want you to expand on that a little bit more because I think that's a great thought for coaches to be able to think about.
Definitely. Again, all like for us, like we are a impact the ball team. We pinch in off the two side on the low with the low man on the two sides. Again, it's offenses keep, again, you do this, you share the game, coaches keep getting better. Again, there's so many good coaches out there. But again, it's hard to do one thing for 40 minutes, I feel. Obviously, offenses, they start getting the ball out quicker, slipping. They may twist your blitz. I think you have to be ready to adjust. As always, if you're any good, you got to hang your hat on what you do. But again, very rarely do we go into a game and just we're in our blitz, we're impact the ball defense for all 40 minutes. Like I said, at some point, For us, should start the game. Like once it gets deeper in the shot clock, like we're obviously going to switch anyways. Once it gets late in the shot clock, again, gotta be good at what you do first. Anything, and again, like deep drop, same deal. It's like you're in a deep drop, and again, have seen it be very successful. Had success doing it, but you know that ball handler is not facing any resistance, and he's going to start to understand. I can be in the paint pretty much all games. I think you always got to have something to just keep. Because players and the coaches are just too good now, and you got to have something to kind of just throw them out of their rhythm.
That's such a good thought for coaches to think about. And you keep referencing, which is awesome, impact the ball. So maybe go deeper for us with the technique or tactics for doing that.
Yeah, for sure. Really, we started doing it in Chicago. Coach Boylan ran our defense, and it was really we played against the Hawks, and their front court at the time was Paul Millsap at the four and Horford at the five. And obviously, Al Horford's one of the best pick and roll defenders, especially when he was younger. He's one of the best pick and roll defenders that I can remember. And they were really aggressive in their defense, and they gave us all sorts of trouble. And again, study it. Obviously, you talk to people on their staff, and then you try to steal it. And that's basically what we did. I try not to overcoach it. Like, obviously, you want early contact with the screener. You don't want to be trying to make up a ton of ground late where you're trying to get to contact. But we tell our guys, obviously, we want early contact. We want to send everything to the screen from the ball handler's perspective. And then we just want to stun the ball and obviously get out. And the simplest metric for our guys is we just ask them, did you stop the ball? If you stopped the ball, you probably did your job. If you get stretched out or the ball gets downhill, you didn't do your job. And always looking at the two guys that are involved, guards' ability to direct the ball, close the distance, get into the ball handler, obviously that's a factor. And then bigs being able to get up and stop the ball.
So thinking about this reality of yours, which is in a way, whether you're an offensive or defensive coach, you've had to be a defensive coach to a certain extent, some of the places you've gone. So how has that shaped your development as a coach, having been focused on one side of the ball in sense in terms of application while still studying the other side of the ball, obviously with great coaches and great leagues that you've coached in?
Yeah, no, I'd say a lot of people, and I know the specialists are, it's becoming really in vogue to say you're a specialist. But again, man, when you compete against, and as an assistant, to me, it's more about just being willing to do the job for whatever the head coach needs, like whatever he needs out of me, I'll do it. And again, you're gonna work at it, all that stuff. When you look at obviously good coaches and majority of those, their teams are balanced. You know what I mean? You can't be an elite defensive team. And you look at Houston, obviously, it was an elite defensive team, but their offense, shoot, they're never ranked outside the top 30. Again, it may look a little different. Obviously, they're an elite offensive rebounding team. If you're going to be at the top of your league, again, you're probably pretty balanced. Like I said, for me, it's what I've always wanted to be, is just learning at both ends. But I think defense is a foundational thing. Again, you see it with, obviously, last night, obviously, a champion was crowned, and OKC is their unbelievable defensive team. So I think it's a foundational thing where it's just we care about winning. We care about defense. We care about getting stops. We're not going out there just trying to outscore people. But like I said, if you look at anybody that's winning at a high level, you're probably not just pointing to one side of the ball, you're looking at both.
You referenced it when we talked just before that you've had your players there now going into their third week. So when you get your players there in the summer in particular, what are some things that are emphasized by you and your program in terms of their development, but also your team's development?
For sure. It's a great question. Like I said, I think we still structure our season a little bit. Like in the summer, I really want to teach our guys how we want to play. And then when we get back in the fall, I want to teach them how we're going to win. So like I said, first week we're doing quite a bit of defense because I think you got to have a little bit of a foundation in. Obviously, we want to do a lot of 5-on-5 and we want to play. Well, it's hard to do that and not again. So we do shell drill, break some things down, give them some base concepts. Like we're not an out deny passing lanes team. So we just give them some simple things. And like I say, we do touch closeouts to shell right into our pick and roll defense. We do that in our pre-practice every day. So give them an idea of what it's supposed to look like on defense. But Well, like I said, I can get really bogged down in the minutiae of it, and I still want summer to be about teaching our guys how we want to play and getting them better, getting us better. And then when we get back in the fall, okay, this is how we want to play, but here's why we win, which is obviously defense, rebounding, toughness, things like that. I would say that kind of probably gives you an idea of how we structure things, where we do stuff in the summer each day that's really just about getting the guys better. I know you've seen all Nate's transition stuff. And again, like as you're in the season later in the year, that probably takes a little bit of a backseat, but in summer, that's a big part of our workouts because we want to get guys better and teach them how we want to play. So that's basically how I structure it. I hope that kind of answers that.
So take us through a player in the off season in your program, kind of team responsibility and then their individual responsibility, whether it's alone or with a manager or whatnot. What type of expectations do we have for players nowadays in the off season?
Yeah, for sure. I'd say I'm pretty hands-on with the player development stuff. We're 2 weeks in and just already sat down with a couple guys today and just gave them some feedback on what I'm seeing, what I want. We blast out a ton of film. Like in the summer, we don't necessarily want to use our hours sitting in a film room, but we do. We send out film every day, team edits and whatnot. Again, like to be very hands-on. I think every 2 3 weeks you probably need to be sat down with each guy, give them feedback, what they see, things they've done well obviously, and then growth areas for them. And then again, the staff's so important. Like we have three great assistants here that are echoing that message and obviously putting their own spin on it as well. We're all on the same page because we as a staff we talk, discuss, and what I want, but maybe they can help communicate that message to them a little bit better. And then, yeah, two GAs. And like I said, this past weekend, we were out recruiting. They're busy, obviously, with guys getting them in, getting small groups in there to just work on some things. And so much of the summer, too, is just we have guys that come in and we got to change their bodies. So educating them on what to put in, how we need to eat, how we need to sleep. Majority of classes nowadays, at least for us, are online. So they got a lot of time to make improvements. So we're really trying to win these 7 weeks, and it's all those all-encompassing things. I'm checking the weights, especially on Monday after the weekend, checking the weights, seeing where we're at, things like that.
I saw in an article you referenced the every area roster built. Can you talk to us about that concept? I thought that was neat phrasing.
Yeah, I guess that's the fun part of college basketball nowadays. Is it's just shoot. I was 2 weeks ago, we're starting the first workout, and you're starting from ground one. It's you got guys that are doing things that you're like, no, we don't do that here. These are our spacing spots. You get better as a coach though, because obviously you got past experience to draw on. And again, you like, how do we help these guys? How do we communicate clear? Or is everything we're doing reinforcing what we want? And if there's wasted time, let's eliminate it. But again, I love the challenge of it. I'd say it's the G League's a great growth tool for coaches because you're going to have times where you get two assignment guys and all of a sudden things are thrown out of whack. And then you're going to have other times where you're shorthanded. And referencing the G League, it's amazing though. Sometimes the nights where you had all of a sudden you had all this talent because they sent two guys down on assignment and you got both your two ways. Sometimes those are the harder nights to coach because maybe some of your everyday guys got to take a little bit backseat starter. Now it's coming off the bench. And sometimes those are the ones that are harder to manage where you got seven guys, everybody pulls together and you play well. I'd say that
It
the
makes the portal seem easy sometimes, doesn't it?
absolutely, yeah. The fluidity of the G League is it's a great tool. And I reference it, at least with myself and our staff, I reference it often.
Awesome. Well, great experience in terms of managing roster, and obviously the ups and downs and the ebb and flow of a season is definitely the G League experience, hearing so many of you, and you can bring that into action in so many ways, there's no doubt.
Hey, coach, a brief interruption of our podcast. You know, the best player development is coaching development. So let's work together to get your entire basketball organization or program unparalleled expertise and access to basketball immersions group memberships. It's affordable and your players will thank you. Contact us today, basketballimmersion.com contact page, or DM us on X or Instagram. Get your coaches full access to our extensive coaching video library, detailed courses, and modern evidence-based coaching ideas. You can have proven coach development at your fingertips for all of your coaches.
Elevate your coaches, elevate your teams, get started now. Basketball Immersion Group membership is where innovation meets excellence. Contact us today at basketballimmersion.com contact page or DM us on X or Instagram. Now back to the podcast.
Speaking of your kind of NBA G League experience, I know you have an analytic background, certainly being around Nate as well. And talk to us maybe about some of the deeper dive analytics that maybe matter to you. What are some numbers beyond the obviously three is worth more than two?
Yeah, for sure. One of the big things I go to is like the paint touch data. And, you know, I think I've again stolen things. I heard TJ Saint talking, and it might even been relayed to me by Coach Pannone with the green threes. We're big on paint touch data. Offensively, are we hitting the paint? And then when possessions where we hit the paint, what are we turning into? What are we scoring? Possessions it's not hitting the paint, what are we scoring? And then obviously you chart them for both ends, defensively and offensively. And it's amazing. You'll have an outlier game every now and then where it hit the paint and we didn't score, but it's amazing how constant that is. The times you played really well on offense, generally the ball hit the paint. And then obviously the times you didn't play well, you probably settled too much. That's one I always look back on. I'm big on first half, second half splits. Again, I've found on the NBA, obviously G League, you kind of pick which basket you go to, and certain teams I've been a part of like struggle in second half, and it's, are we getting tired? I've often found it's because our talk is like, when our talk's away from our bench, our talk, the five guys on the floor, it ain't near as good as it needs to be. Where it's in front of our bench and we got assistants that are up barking, we got practice squatters, walk-ons that are up relaying things, little things like that. But paint touch data for me is huge. Obviously, the four factors is the foundation of obviously your efficiency. So anything that's out of way on that, you know what I'm saying? EFG is obviously the most important of the four factors. So you're always looking at that turnover percentage, especially our offense. Like, you can't be a good team and turn the ball over. And then I thought we made a jump this year, and that was something I really took from Nate. And I look back when I was a G League coach, it wasn't in vogue to crash the offensive class. And I get to Alabama, and which was really foolish because I think of some of the games we lost, and I just said, man, think of Mike Miller at Westminster, who I couldn't beat, and his team, they didn't really play that fast, and they were a great first shot defense. I'm like, how are we not crashing? We lose to them a playoff game, but we don't crash. So then I go work with Nate at Alabama, and that's really the secret sauce of their offense, is their offensive rebounding. So we made a big jump this year. We were much better offensive rebounding, which was huge. For us, we're looking at free throw rate, and we got to be better because we lost a battle at the free throw line. We fouled too much and we didn't get to line. And then when we did get to line, we didn't make them at the clip we need to. So to me, free throw rate, though, that's also like a recruiting thing too. It's if you got guys that have a track record of getting a line. I mean, you see it in the NBA. It ain't the system. It's Jimmy Butler in Chicago. He was going to get to line. Obviously, SGA for OKC tried to take that in mind when we're evaluating prospects. It's like, we got to do a better job on the free throw line.
Take us a little deeper on the first, second half splits. I haven't had anyone talk about that much here. What is meaningful with that for you? And then what are some ways that you can obviously counter that, say, if you have a negative either way?
Yeah, I honestly think it probably goes in, especially I found that it goes into defensively. And again, you play a great first half in defense, you go in, obviously they make their adjustments and whatnot. I'd say it probably goes with what we're talking about earlier, is having a change of pace. Like, how do we gave up, let's say we gave up 0.95 in the first half, but then the second half they scored a 115, a 20-point difference per 100. Therein lies the story. I'd say it really goes with cultivating something you can go to. For us, it's if our A is impacting the ball, what happens when they start really wearing us out and we're in long closeouts and we're in rotations? We probably got to do something different. and probably don't want to wait too long to see it because it's one of those things you might go to it early and then be able to go back to a blitz once you've treaded water there for a little bit. I really found it defensively helps. And then it's challenging our guys because you're challenging them to play 40 minutes and naturally your energy and all that might be really high out the gate, but it's pointing out to the guys that, hey, we got to be able to sustain things for 40 minutes. I'd say all those things.
That's fascinating to hear more. Thank you for that. And you referenced again the background G League and the different types of adaptability that's necessary, but maybe more focused on from the pro game, the game planning, the importance of scout, because again, more than practice, it's more of a game planning scout based league. So take us through that, but maybe how that has helped you as a college coach as well.
Definitely. And you fortunate to you work with you learn from other great assistants you work with too. Think of like Dan Burke in Indiana. You just I'm fortunate to like steal from those guys and they help you obviously when you're young and you're trying to get better at it. I would say in the NBA, like matchups just become so important. And it's probably again certain defensive schemes can lend itself to keeping matchups more. And then obviously for me, it's off ball rules, you know, how much off ball switching you need to do, which obviously, again, if you're guarding actions, it's helpful, but you're also losing matchups. So those are all the things you have to weigh. Obviously, if there's a back pick, if you switch it, it's probably a good way to guard that action. Is that going to be your rule? Or are you going to give up matchups? You know what I'm saying? That easily. And I would say in the NBA, it really forces you to think about matchups because, again, there's just players that are really hard to guard. You really need your best matchup on that player. And if you're losing your matchup, if you're not OKC and you don't have world-class defenders all across the board, you might be in trouble. I would say, again, like the NBA forces you because the players are obviously so good and they're also so smart. And they've been coached by such great coaches. You really just you got to be clear in your messaging, your communication. They're going to ask you some things you would have liked to have already thought about it. And obviously that's where you rely on your other coaches to not necessarily poke holes in your plan, but to discuss and hey, when this comes up, what are we going to do? So I think it really just forces you to be on top of your game. But when you're guarding great players, it's just
Really tough, and being around great players as well, which you referenced there with some of the questions they ask. Talk to us a little bit deeper about that, because that's again something challenging like that makes you a better coach, but it's also unnerving at times, isn't it?
yeah, absolutely. For me, I was fortunate. I was when Fred took me with him to Chicago, I was still pretty young. There was guys that were older I was coaching that were older than me. But I think, like I said, authenticity and vulnerability too. I don't think you can, hey, you're gonna learn from players the same. Hopefully they learn something from you. You're definitely gonna learn from players. So I don't think it's ever again, you know, it's ever wrong to rely on them once. Again, when you got a veteran team like year two, like Rajon's a really smart basketball player. Hey, this is what I think, and this is why I think. And I think there's unintended consequences of doing things outside this. But what do you think? You know what I mean? You have experiences and you played a lot of games and all that too. I think all that stuff, I think it helps, which, you know, again, just being authentic, being vulnerable. Now you can't be vulnerable all the time. Like you gotta be competent. But if you try something, it doesn't work. I tried it. I know why we tried it, but it didn't work. And let's figure out what's next. I just think all those things. But again, it's all, like I said, it all stems from just being prepared. And again, even if something doesn't work, if you're confident in how you got to that decision, I think you can justify it because the reality is, yeah, sometimes it's not gonna work. We're gonna do it, play it this way, and they played, it was their night, and it wasn't ours, but we'll figure it out.
You mentioned this, and I may say it differently, but you mentioned essentially that effectiveness isn't exclusively about wins and losses, while still acknowledging the ultimate evaluation metric. So, talk to us a little bit about beyond player development and the different things, getting people to your crowd, having a great win-loss record. What are some other things beyond wins-loss that you can think about in terms of metrics that help evaluate a program and kind of your personal satisfaction in knowing you're doing a good job?
Yeah, that's a great question. Obviously, Georgia Southern, year one, in my year one, we lost our first 12 games. We were able to play better in conference. We went 8-10 in the league, won a game at the conference tournament. But shoot, man, I got my teeth kicked in. I had a lot of coaches checking on me, texting me, make sure I was all right.
But a lot of those are money games where you have to play those games to make money too,
Yeah,
right?
yeah. We at Tennessee, at Georgia Tech to open, at Tennessee, at Michigan State. I was watching Michigan State the game before, so they played Arizona and lost, and I was home at Thanksgiving. I was just rooting like heck they would win. I'm like, gosh, I don't want to see these guys off a loss. But yeah, it's again. So when you didn't have success in year one, I thought year two we made a step. And again, I was what you said, pointing to like what or you are what your record says you are. You can't run from that as a coach. You know what I'm saying? So year two, I thought we made a step. Obviously, we're trying to make another step because 17 and 16, that's again, we want to be better than that. We all do as coaches. But I think remembering like your why of I'm a big time reader, and I'm at the point now where I'm rereading a lot of books. And I think it's just, remembering your why in college basketball right now. It's challenging because it's just very, the reality is it's very transactional. It's again, it's just as much transactional as professional basketball. You're only guaranteed to have a guy for 10, 8, 10 months. How can I impact them for however long they're here? You know what I'm saying? And when, if I do a great job with it, because these things, I tell this often, like with young managers, GAs, I'm like, you take the work ethic that you learn working at high levels of basketball, you take that anywhere, you're going to be successful. And now I look at it with our players too. It's, are we giving them tools to be successful long after here? Because it may only be 8 to 10 months. Hopefully, you have some guys that are here much longer than that. But for me, and this probably answers a little bit different than maybe what you thought, but it's just my why. It's, I love basketball, but would I love basketball if it was just me? I don't know if that's why I love that. I do love basketball, but I want it to be more than just about me. I love the relationships that it's created throughout my life, and what's, can't play one on all. It's about other people. To me, that's what I'm evaluating myself, and how do we create that here?
Love that. Great answer. And what's one thing maybe from Fred Hoiberg that you can share with us that's been a big impact?
Yeah, Fred, working for Fred as a young coach, it's just, I was so lucky in that way, spoiled. I think if Fred offered me a lifetime contract as assistant, I think my wife would try to get me to sign it, but she
She
loves
liked
Fred.
him too.
Yeah, she loves Fred and his family. He's awesome. Fred gave me what anyone was looking for was opportunity. He had a certain amount of confidence in me, which I'll always be grateful for. But what I'd say, something I took from Fred was his playing background is so influential in the way he coaches. He obviously was a great college player, All-American, but then in the NBA, he was able to carve out, and he would have played much longer. You can ask him, he would tell you, but he would have played much longer if it wasn't for his heart deal. But he played 10 years in the NBA, but had to do it all different. Came in as a second round pick, and obviously Larry Brown in Indiana, and was able to carve out a role in Chicago and Minnesota. So Fred was really mindful what the player goes through. And that was always on his mind. He was probably still thought like a player to a certain extent. So I would say his messaging with guys is just, it's really good. It's really on point. And it's his ability to connect with every guy too. It's to know the feelings that your eighth or ninth guy is feeling, and to find the right way to connect with him as well as like your best players. So he had kind of lived it and been all different points throughout his career. And I think he would always reference the coaches that he felt like really connected with him and what they did, and he would try to do that as well. I would say his mindful of how the players are going to perceive your coaching and his coaching, I would say that really sets him apart.
How about Nate Oates?
Yeah, Nate's awesome. Like I said, long. Again, he was my first boss, obviously, as a high school coach.
But maybe
He
what's something specific, technical, tactical,
yeah.
philosophical, cultural, something that has stayed with you?
Yeah, for sure. Really just work ethic is just overall competitiveness. Nate is, I'm competitive. I think we all are competitive to a certain extent. Nate is extremely competitive. And you saw it in, when I worked with him in high school, he just wanted to outwork everybody. And then I think about when I first got to Alabama. I mean, our first summer workouts, man, I was I was coming from NBA G League, and we're obviously using our 4 hours, but we're doing camp demonstrations to get extra hours. He wants them to be the hardest working team in the country. And there's just inherent peer pressure when you're at Alabama that you're going to be working. And if you're not working, you're going to get passed up. He's just got a tremendous, just competitive desire to be the best, and obviously for Alabama to be the best. And when you're with him, like, it's iron sharpens iron. Like, you're going to have to be that way, or else it's not going to work there. Again, it speaks to just his competitiveness and his desire to want to win and be better. That just is really the foundation of their program. He obviously has his core values, but max effort, continuous growth, two of the three core values, that's really all Nate.
I think a lot of us can picture that now after you explain that too. Joe Bolin.
I would say this, man, like, working with great coaches, working for great coaches, Coach Boylan, again, similar to what I was saying with some of these other guys, really fortunate to work with him as a young coach. You're gonna learn some ball if you're sitting in after games, going through the film, seeing him present to the team. He's a teacher at his core. He can really teach basketball. And when you're a young coach and you're still trying to learn, and we're always trying to learn, but when that learning is just so imperative to have the opportunity to sit with him and learn, because to me, he's just at his best when he's teaching basketball, and he's just really good at it. So I would say the thing that stands out with him is just his ability to teach basketball, and how much you're going to learn and grow when you're with him every day and you're in that environment. Like I said, Frank Vogel, first boss in Indiana, all very different. I've seen guys have success, a lot of different styles, but you take something from each of them.
I love that. Love that aspect of your career and everything with it. Now, shape for us a little bit deeper than Georgia Southern, the opportunity. Third year, what are we looking to do in third year? And then what are some things in terms of your expectations for the program?
Definitely taking this job, it's what I love is honestly is like the opportunity for myself to get better. You try some things, find some things you really like, do some things, and you're like, not good. I'd say as much as anything, obviously you need good players. That's reality. That's recruiting. That's all that stuff. But I like to look at the things that myself and our staff, like the areas we're getting better at. And this would be year three. This would be the first year where everybody on our staff, it's where there's no like year ones. Like, one of, obviously, we have our director of like operations analytics. He's coming in year one, but he's somebody I worked with at Alabama. So I'd say I feel really good about our staff and the continuity that's been there. And they know me, and they know how I'm wired and how I want to do things. And then it's how much better can we get as coaches and as a staff, and eliminate some of the pitfalls that you've had where you tried different things, maybe they didn't work, but you feel like you're a better version of yourself in year three than you were in year one. Part of it's just experience, what's ahead, what's coming. And again, I just, again, like, the players, absolutely, we really want our team. Again, with a new team, it's like, how do we connect? How do we become a team? We're definitely asking ourselves that. Again, the basketball stuff, that we're going to get to basketball stuff, how we want to play, but it's like, how do we get this team to connect? And then one of the things, like I said, I love looking to is, as coaches, are we getting better? I have a great staff, and they've been with me now, and that's going to help, because we got reference points that we can reference. And again, things that have given us issues in the past, they can't get. Again, I felt like some teams have stole games from us early in the season, just playing zone. We're going to make sure that doesn't happen again. You know what I mean? It's just experience. I think it makes you better. I don't have a fixed mindset as a coach. I feel like I'm still getting better, and I feel like our staff's getting better. And that's one of the things that's most exciting. And then using that to positively impact your guys.
Super to hear your introspection. And you mentioned reference, or you referenced reading some books again. What's maybe one of the books that you read again or are reading again that's one that you're happy you reread again?
Yeah, for sure. I'm reading Simon Sinek's one of my favorites. I'm reading Leaders Eat Last. Again, I read it quite a while ago, maybe 6, 7 years ago. Like I said, really just The nature of college basketball, like I said, it's you can't run from reality. It is what it is, but you can still be in charge of the environment you're trying to create here at Georgia Southern. That's what I'm reading right now. I'm enjoying it. And how can we serve our players for however long they're here again? And maybe we do such a good job doing it that they want to stay a little bit longer. That's one of the ones I'm reading right now that's at the forefront of my mind.
Very cool. Charlie, so many fun things to hear from you and insights that you provided. And really cool to see you coaching at Jordan Southern and building that program up. And with all your different experiences, it seems to be a trend in college basketball. Obviously, you have a lot of NBA experience, G League experience coming into college basketball. And you're one of those early influencers. So I hope you know your impact on the game and all the different things that you've done as well. So thank you for sharing the game with us.
Thank you, Chris.